Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe, and we're also live on Facebook page. In case you'd like to comment on our stories, just go to our page, DW Africa, leave it there, and we will read it live on air.
Coming up, a year after the death of a Congolese opposition leader, his son is proving he is ready to step into his father's shoes.
The personalization of political power, both state power and power in institutions like political parties, is one of the challenges that Congo is facing.
Cash-strapped Namibia bans politicians from foreign travel and is expected to put troops on leave because the government can't afford to feed them.
This is probably quite a commendable move. But then again, you have some media reports stating that actually it is not that it will not be strictly enforced and that exceptions can be made.
These are just some of the stories we have lined up for you. But first, here's a chance to listen to what has been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Germany's lower house passed a migrant reunification bill in Berlin on Thursday, allowing a maximum of 1,000 migrants of direct family members per month to settle in Germany. The Bundestag passed the bill under the direction of German Chancellor Angela Merkel's Conservative Union and the Social Democrats, the SPDs, boosting Merkel's bid to forge a coalition between the country's two largest parties. German Interior Minister Thomas de Maizière says the new law shows commitment between the two parties.
Yes, we made a commitment. For us, the CDU, it was important that we have a legal regulation for migrant family reunifications. And for the SPD, it was important that family reunifications are possible in general. Here is our commitment.
A court in Turkey has reversed its decision to release Taner Kılıç, the head of rights group Amnesty International in Turkey, just one day after it had decided to release him into judicial control. Turkey's amnesty researcher Andrew Gardner called the overturned verdict a disgrace of justice. Kılıç has been in prison since June on terrorism charges for allegedly supporting U.S. Muslim-based preacher Fethullah Gülen, who Turkey blamed for a failed coup attempt in July 2016. The European Union's Asylum Agency reported a drop in asylum applications this year, as the number of people seeking protection in Europe dropped by almost half compared to the year before. They say around 700,000 people sought asylum this year in Europe. It is the second consecutive year that numbers have gone down. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Kenya's High Court on Thursday ordered the government to end its media shutdown after three Kenyan TV stations were taken off air by the government. The stations had broadcasted a mock inauguration by opposition leader Raila Odinga, who swore himself in as the people's president in a ceremony in Nairobi on Tuesday.
We fought for a long time to give this country a new constitution in 2010. That new constitution, together with all the freedoms that it entails, is under serious attack right now.
The government says the stations were taken off air to avoid incitement to violence. South Africa's Broadcasting Corporation posted on Twitter that South African President Jacob Zuma is to meet with top African National Congress party officials over his future. There were no further details. Zuma has been facing calls from within the ruling ANC party to resign over a number of scandals. And finally, some 950 miners were trapped in a gold quarry in South Africa on Thursday after a massive power outage prevented lifts from bringing the miners to the surface. A spokesman for the mining company told reporters rescue teams had been sent down to the mine. The trapped miners were not believed to be in immediate danger. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
This is DW's Africa Link. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. You're also live on Facebook, DW Africa.
We begin today's program in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where the opposition and the Catholic Church have been paying tribute to a historic opponent, Etienne Tshisekedi, on the first anniversary of his death. Kabila's refusal to step down when his mandate expired in December 2016 has emboldened several opposition groups, raising the prospect of the country sliding back into the kind of warfare that killed millions in the 1990s, mostly from hunger and disease.
And the big question is, could the death of Etienne Tshisekedi have fractured the opposition? A question I put to Christopher Kayumba, a researcher on the Great Lakes region.
There are some observers who claim that the death of the Congolese veteran politician Etienne Tshisekedi is one of the reasons why the transition of power in Kinshasa remains problematic. But I personally believe, in view of what has been happening in Congo for the last two decades and the tricks that President Joseph Kabila has been using to stay in power after the end of two constitutional terms, I don't think, even if veteran politician Tshisekedi was still around, I don't think that the transition of power would have happened in Congo, because I believe the central problem to transition of power in Congo is the willingness of President Joseph Kabila to stay in power and the weakness of the opposition and lack of cohesion among the citizens.
Now, one person who wants to step in Etienne Tshisekedi's fate is his son, Félix Tshisekedi. In your opinion, do you think the name still carries the weight like it did in the past, and do opposition groups see Félix Tshisekedi as someone who can lead the opposition to the promised land, if I may put it that way?
The fact that Félix inherited the political party that was led by his father is in itself a problem. The personalization of political power, both state power and power in institutions like political parties, is one of the challenges that Congo is facing, whereby when the leader of a political party dies, the son takes over. It is the same that happens in government and in the state in Congo. Joseph Kabila himself inherited power after the assassination of his father in 2001. So I don't think that Félix, the son of Etienne Tshisekedi, is the answer or the solution to peaceful transfer of power. Especially that the opposition is very fragmented. There is over 400 political parties in Congo. Unless those 400 political parties in Congo unite and speak with one voice, I don't think that Félix on his own will manage to.
I was speaking to Christopher Kayumba, a researcher on the Great Lakes region.
And now moving on to Russia, the Court of Arbitration of Sport has ruled in favor of 39 Russian athletes on Thursday. The decision to lift individual Olympic bans marks the latest development in the ongoing scandal over accusations of state-sponsored doping in the country.
The doping allegations are so severe that Russian athletes will not be allowed to march under their own flag at the upcoming Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea. Elizabeth Schumacher has more.
The CAS upheld 28 and partially upheld 11 of the 39 appeals made by Russian athletes against the lifetime bans imposed on them by the International Olympic Committee. The decision was a huge blow to the IOC and to WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency. The IOC had banned the Russians for doping breaches at the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia, following a WADA report about a state-run doping program. While the CAS conceded that the program did exist, it argued that the IOC had not presented sufficient evidence to prove that the individual athletes had actively taken part in the doping program. IOC spokesman Mark Adams lamented the decision and said his organization would consider filing an appeal.
This may have a serious impact on the future fight against doping. Therefore, the IOC will analyze the reasoned decisions very carefully once they are available and consider consequences, including an appeal to the Swiss Federal Tribunal.
The athletes will still be unable to participate in the Winter Games in South Korea this month, but their lifetime bans have been lifted. Russian Olympic Committee President Alexander Zhukov thanked the CAS for restoring the Russian athletes' medals.
Elizabeth Schumacher with that report.
And now going back to Africa, the Namibian president Hage Geingob banned politicians and civil servants from foreign business travel on Wednesday in order to save money after he swapped his own private jet for commercial flights. The Southern African country has been struggling to control its finances with government debt levels soaring in recent years, leading to investor warnings over its economic outlook. Geingob also swapped his own jet for commercial flights.
And thousands of Namibian troops are also expected to be sent on leave next month because there's no money to feed them and pay their utility bills. From Windhoek, Anna Sakius has more.
President Hage Geingob sought to reduce government spending on overseas travels by ministers and political office bearers. Locals, however, feel that the move will not have much of an impact on government. Geoffrey Muhinda shares his views.
The fact that the president has declared or has cut international trips or foreign trips per se, it's a good move, good and bad. The good side of it, it's actually now we are towards the end financial year, so many people used to travel to cut over the leftovers that we kept for end March financial year.
Windhoek resident Fabian Amukwelele also supports the action taken by President Geingob.
Well, I think it's a great idea. Even though it might be for a short period, it is good in a sense that if you make it in a longer period, you are compromising the security of the head of state. So just to give that short window frame to motivate others to emulate the same. So I think I'm in agreement that as a president, living by example.
Although the ban is welcomed, Namibians equally felt that there are other economic areas that require the same intervention. Dietrich Remmert had this to say.
Apparently, government has decided to suspend all foreign trips by ministers, deputy ministers, and so forth until end of February. So in principle, this was probably quite a commendable move. But then again, you have some media reports stating that actually it is not that it will not be strictly enforced, and that exceptions can be made. Depending on the type, on the ministry or the type of trip.
Anna Sakius with that report. And we are monitoring developments in Kenya after the High Court suspended a government shutdown of three TV channels. The shutdown was prompted by the channel's coverage of opposition leader Raila Odinga's symbolic presidential inauguration this week. And on Twitter, many people are raging Zipporah, like Linus Kaikai, you know, one of the senior editors in Kenya, spent the night in the newsroom. And on Twitter, he says, when a raging mad bull charges at a crowd, it will not matter that you are a vegetarian. Have a truthful day, Kenya. I mean, he's saying, stop the gagging of the media. We must speak out the truth for the politicians to listen, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's very sad that the journalist had to spend the night in the newsrooms because they're afraid that the police will come after them.
Definitely, it was encroaching outside the perimeters, you know, waiting for anyone who steps out and is put on a waiting pickup. And of course, the Kenya Police Service says, we have launched a manhunt for a man captured on CCTV cameras aiming a firearm at a police vehicle with intent to fire before the NASA event began at Uhuru Park. Well, the High Court has decided that's one thing, but of course, many people are waiting to see whether the government can really open up these channels.
Actually, people have been waiting. I've been talking to many of my friends and they're saying they're still waiting for the channels to get back on air.
And President Uhuru says, as part of the Big Four plan, we'll henceforth teach and tailor all the uniforms for our disciplined forces. That's because the police, you know, acted with so much restraint not to go to the crowds when Raila Odinga was being sworn in, you know, symbolically or in a mock kind of event.
And Isaac, of course, people have also been talking on our Facebook page. For example, Bolong Solomon from Cameroon says the worst is happening in Cameroon, whereby stations are shut down and journalists also risk being arrested.
Mutai Ngunyi is one of our usual, interview partners. He says we have 43 TV stations also in Kenya. If you shut down three stations, how is that media clampdown? Government should shut them down forever. Kenya is happier without acidic pessimism. That's a strong statement. And of course, many people say also the government invites people or the press for press briefings, yet it has shut down the TV stations. Yes. Where do they want that information to be aired?
The thing is, they still need the journalists, and the journalists need the politicians. They work hand in hand.
Anyway, keep those comments flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and we will read them whenever we can.
Welcome back once again to the program. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Liberian youths welcome President George Weah's decision to cut 25% of his salary as one way to save money for developmental purposes.
I wish that all other government officials can follow suit. The budget of the country is like only based on payment of salary for government officials.
And of course, another story that is making headlines in East Africa is that the Kenyan High Court has suspended a government shutdown of three TV channels. But of course, on Twitter, NTV Kenya says the government is expected to restore NTV, Citizen TV and KTN News signals after the suspension for 14 days. But anyway, before all that, this is our last episode on genetically modified foods or GMOs from Kenya.
Yes, Isaac, and as we know, in 2012, a ban was imposed in Kenya on the importation of and research into genetically modified foods. But in reality, that ban is being slowly undermined. And watching what has been happening in neighboring Rwanda, where the parliament is on its way to legalize GMOs, scientists are worried that Kenya will be left behind. So now they're busy researching how the use of GMO could end the challenges of food insecurity. Rhoda Othiambo reports.
Food security played a major role in last year's presidential campaigns. The price of maize flour, a staple food, rose sharply, partly following a drought across part of the country. People were hungry and worried. It is for this reason that biotechnician Dr. Joel Ocheng believes that Kenya should fully adopt GM technology, since both farmers and consumers will benefit from it.
The flagship project for now is maize, because we want to something that is, has had the highest impact on food security in this country. And as you are aware, that maize is the most consumed crop in Kenya by almost over 75% of the people.
Ocheng tells me that within a few months, Kenya is due to start field trials on GM maize that will last about 18 months. Although the 2012 ban is still in place, the Kenyan parliament recently gave scientists a go-ahead for their field trials. But researchers could face the wrath of pesticide companies in the future if they manage to develop crops which are both drought and pest resistant without the use of insecticides.
So now what is happening is that people have accepted GM, but because of trade and deals, this particular maize that we're talking about is not going to offer them any income for those who are cutting deals. So we are being fought from an economic angle, not from a health angle. But those who would choose to fight GM technology are going through others to purport that there's a health risk. How can there be a health risk in planting it when there's no health risk in eating it or importing it? Does it make sense?
But even with 2.6 million people in Kenya, who according to the United Nations data can't afford a decent meal, the Kenyan public is divided over the issue of GMOs.
I don't support genetic products because the cost of production for farmers is already high. Introduction of genetic maize varieties means that farmers will have to purchase new seed variety every planting season. That is an additional cost.
This is science. Science is there and we have to accept it. One day, one time, we have to take these GMOs. Take, for example, drought resistant. It's just a specific gene that affects the maybe water or the resistance or maybe a disease resistance crop. It's just the gene that affects the pest that is changed. Nothing much. So eventually we have to embrace these things.
Kenya is not stopping at maize either. The country is busy developing transgenic cassava, sorghum, rice, pigeon peas, groundnuts, cotton, and Irish potatoes, all of which are at various stages of research. If the researchers can demonstrate that their modifications could end food security, then the government might just think again about the ban they imposed on GMOs.
Rhoda Othiambo with that report, the last of our series on GMOs in Africa.
Use on.
And now it's time for us to dip into the lives of young people on the continent. This week in New Zone, we head to Liberia, where the younger generation has been reacting to newly sworn-in President George Weah's State of the Nation address. Weah promised to cut his salary by 25% and called on other civil servants to follow suit. Many young people are happy with the development, since cost-cutting measures mean that money will be saved and used for other projects that will benefit them. Let's listen first to the President's announcement.
I am informing you today with immediate effect that I will reduce my salary and benefit by 25% and give the proceeds back to the Consolidated Fund for allocation and appropriation as they see fit. In the meantime, I will urge you, honorable ladies and gentlemen, to follow my lead.
And of course, many youth were elated at the prospect of the president cutting his salary with the hope that other officials will emulate him. Let's listen to their reactions.
The salary issue is a welcoming issue that will be in the interest. And I wish that all other government officials can follow suit. The budget of the country is like only based on payment of salary for government officials. Like, for example, the president of the Republic of Liberia make more money than that of even the president of the United States of America. And it's not benefiting the Liberian public as a whole. Young people are not being able to go to school. Like, for example, the University of Liberia students right now are not going to class because they are not able to pay their school fees. Registration is already being closed.
The speech of the president, I took the 25%.
The speech of the president, he took 25% of his salary deduction in order to boost the economic system of the country. Because nowadays people are just taking huge amounts of salary, which of course is not necessary.
George Weah also promised to scrap the dual nationality law, which restricts citizenship to black people, calling it racist. He also pledged to scrap the law that prohibits foreigners owning land, and there was quite a mix of reactions to that.
I disagree with the president on the issue of dual citizenship because I believe that it is not in the interest of the state at this particular time point. Because the issue of allegiance to two countries, I don't see it being the only way our country can develop. We have instances where people who have dual citizenship connection committed crime in this country. Take, for example, the issue of the Ellen Cochran scenario. Today, she cannot be brought back to this country to face prosecution. A lot of that. I mean,
looking at the issue with the citizenships, it's not that bad because I think it will help to develop our sector easily.
The dual citizenship, I believe that Liberia will be transformed. For example, you have vice on land across Liberia where they are not developing them. But if we open up and give a foreigner the go-ahead to purchase those land and develop, and certain buildings should be constructed, that would beautify our city. I support dual citizenship to the letter.
Liberian youth reacting to the recent State of the Nation address by newly inaugurated President George Weah. Of course, he's facing a broke country, and Liberia president himself decided to cut his salary. On our Facebook page, we set the ball rolling by asking you what you think about the salary cuts. And Ari from Cameroon says, that's why we need young presidents like Weah.
Gideon from Nigeria says it is a welcome development and I'm still expecting much more radical changes and taking those routes that are less traveled for development. African leaders need to be more pragmatic by laying good example.
And someone who goes by the name Prophet Anyangwe Sebastian from the English part of Cameroon, he specified that in big letters. This is a good start for a good leader, he said.
Tiger King says somebody who does not need power, money or popularity, since he has seen them all. He has also a soccer legacy. He just wants to live for the great good. Kudos to George Weah.
David from Southeast Nigeria, Zipporah, he says, that's one thing other African rulers will not want to hear. What they care for is those men who will ask the old past president how to steal from his nation. Many thanks for those comments. That was a good one and a hilarious one.
But we
one,
have
isn't
Namibia
it?
Now as well. The president is also doing
exactly.
A
he auctioned
thing.
Off his jet for and opted for commercial flights. Well, yeah. Keep on the debate on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Speaking out.
The safety and protection of journalists is becoming a major concern in Kenya, with numerous cases of violence, intimidation and threats against female journalists on the increase. According to the human rights organization Haki Africa, they received 214 cases of sexual harassment among female journalists between the months of October and December last year. Many of them complain of sexual harassment in their workplace, where senior male colleagues demand sexual favors in exchange for promotion or even getting a job. Civil society groups are now calling for action to be taken against these cases. Diana Wanyonyi from Mombasa has been speaking to the journalist whose names have been changed in this report.
Emily Nyota is a female journalist in a local media station here in Mombasa. I find her busy in her office working to beat the deadline. Her contagious smile hides the scars that she vividly remembers during her internship in a media house after completing her diploma studies. She says her male boss put her through hell after she turned down an offer to have a sexual relationship with him.
Once I had an editor who is a guy. By then I was an intern in one of our local media houses. Then he approached me, wanting to have a relationship with me. He promised to give me a job, but when I refused, he started hating me. One day he sent me a terror-related story at Masjid Musa. By then I was green. I didn't know how to cover those stories. But because I have refused to what he wanted, he forced me to do those stories without caring what I'll go through, without caring what risk he was putting me.
Most of the female journalists do not speak about the harassment they experience in their offices due to fear of intimidation or even losing their jobs. Jacqueline Wafula, who has worked as journalist for 80 years, says there is no organization or union for them to express their grievances.
If we are not going to cry out or to speak out, these things will be growing. And let's say in the coming years, there will be more threats. Women will not be valued in those media. Like now, many people think that female journalists are prostitutes.
Sexual harassment of female journalists is not just confined in the newsroom. Female journalists speak of sexual assault from their public and the news sources when they go to cover stories. The Media Council of Kenya says more has to be done to empower them financially as well. Victor Bwire is the council's deputy chief executive.
We have cases where sources have asked you to go for an interview at the evening, especially these public figures. And we have cases where some of them, either through consensual sex or not, have given birth with women journalists who are now mothering children belonging to their sources. Sometimes it might be they have been pushed into it, not really violently, but like in cases where you are told sources want to lie, how they will help you here and there, they will tell you how they'll pay your rent, what conditions journalists are going through, how they have not been paid for 6 months. It's a very tempting situation.
In most cases, female journalists are too embarrassed to talk about sexual harassment and just end up resigning from work without reporting the matter to relevant authorities.
Again, it's also a very sensitive subject. Like one of the cases when we went to the police and said, but that was not rape, don't worry, his boyfriends. It might be true or not, but you see, that's the attitude. And you remember, even the Sexual Offence Act in Kenya also makes it very difficult for people to report, even just generally, to report rape cases. And look at even makeup of our Kenyan newsrooms. How many women are there, even in senior positions? They are not there. It's not because of capacity. The environment is not conducive enough for them to continue fighting on.
That report was compiled by Diana Wanyonyi.
And as we mentioned before, Kenya's High Court has ordered an end of government TV station shutdown. And some of you have been commenting. David from Kenya says, I feel like a Russian where the government has all the say. Who knew this would be done in Kenya?
And Hoggy from Cameroon says, Kenya is an example of free democracy in Africa. Kenya is more democratic than my country, Cameroon.
And of course, Mbong Solomon is also from Cameroon. He says, the worst is happening in Cameroon, whereby stations are shut down and journalists risk being arrested.
And, of course, we have someone else. Hoggy goes on to say Kenya's military could allow protestants protest on the street, though closing media houses without arresting the reporters in Cameroon. This is strange.
And someone, the chairman of the Media Council in Kenya, Masharia, says he's going to sue the government seeking shutdown compensation. I mean, revenue lost.
Yeah, and that is what people have been talking about. We are happy to get your comments. Keep talking on our page, DW Africa on Facebook. I'm Zipora Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Bye for now.